Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And guys, I apologize. This was just an absolutely insanely busy week on my end. I had to postpone the recording of the show not once, not twice, but three times. And as I sit down, it is now 10:30 on a Friday night here in Vancouver, Canada, meaning that most of you won't get the show until Saturday morning, wherever you are, or Saturday morning, technically here on the west coast of North America, Saturday elsewhere around the globe, but it's all good. I apologize once again for being so late, but hey, a little bit of a formula weekend, and that can't be a bad thing. So we have a lot to talk about since we last sat down around the global campfire of Formula One fans, and it has been a ridiculously busy week. And we're going to go back and we're going to be talking a lot about Ferrari and what happened at the Brazilian Grand Prix, and I'd be remiss if I talking point what happened, and I think it's going to really set the tone and what's going to I guess be the pecking order at Ferrari. I think they're going to have to really lay down some ground rules for 2020, and rightly so. I mean, the last thing that they want there is to have a situation where it devolves into, let's just say, a Hamilton type situation that Mercedes had a couple of years ago. But before we do that, why don't we talk now a little bit, or let's just go back and just go over the top 10 for the Brazilian Grand Prix. I know it's almost a week ago, but it kind of sets up everything nicely. So winning was, of course, Max Verstappen. Second, Pierre Gasly. Third was Carlos Sainz. Fourth was Kimi Raikkonen. Fifth was Antonio Giovinazzi. Sixth was Daniel Ricciardo. Seventh was Lewis Hamilton. Eighth was Lando Norris in the second to McLaren. Ninth was Sergio Perez. And rounding out the 10th and final points-paying position was Danny Kvyat in the other Toro Rosso. So yeah, a bit of an unusual top 10 or top 10 finishers at the Brazilian Grand Prix, but it was a rather bizarre finish to the race. I mean, it looked like it was going to be business as usual, and obviously it was going to be either a Mercedes, a Ferrari, or a Red Bull winning that race. But then Valtteri Bottas succumbing to mechanical issues, and then that triggered the first of a safety car period, and then the two Ferraris doing what Ferrari's done best this year, and that's shooting themselves in the foot when Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc came together after Charles passed Seb, and then Seb passed him down the first straightaway after the Curva del Sol, and just really touched. They really did not get very close or collide very hard, I should say, but it was enough to cause the damage. Charles's wing was broken, and Seb managed to puncture his tire, a double DNF for Ferrari, and then that really triggered things, really set off the unexpected avalanche of bizarreness at the end. But it was interesting, it was good to see, and a couple of safety cars really can change the face of a Grand Prix. I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't be the only one saying that I was going to expect it to be, well, what we've seen basically for many, many years, being, like I say, either a Mercedes, Ferrari, or Red Bull winning. And while Max Verstappen did win the race, I think that obviously from there on down it gets interesting. But hey, that's a part of motor racing, that's what makes it fun. And honestly, great for Pierre Gasly. We're going to talk a little bit more about him later in the show, but really good to see Gasly get a podium, and the same with Carlos Sainz, even though he didn't actually get to participate in the podium ceremony. I mean, that transpired a little bit later on because Lewis getting into that accident with Alex Albon late in the race was handed a 5-second time penalty, but that didn't come down until about two or three hours after the race. So unfortunately, Sainz, although he got the reward of a P3, didn't get to actually celebrate it. But hey, it all works out in the end. And well, a P3, a third is a third, but also good to see a good result for the two Alfa Romeos, because I mean they've been pretty uncompetitive, and it's been disappointing. I mean, obviously they're the new incarnation of Sauber, or Sauber Alfa Romeo as it was last year, but they did have some promising moments last year. And let's be fair, most of those promising moments in 2018 came at the hands of Charles Leclerc, but they'd slowly been kind of crawling up through the pecking order in Formula One, but hasn't really gone anywhere this year. And if anything, they've regressed a little bit over the course of the entire season. Anyway, so before we get into the news, just for LARF, so even though it doesn't actually mean anything, let's just go over the drivers and the Constructors' Championship. Obviously, Lewis Hamilton was crowned the Formula One champion, world champion again this year, a couple of races ago. Nonetheless, Lewis coming home in seventh, collected a handful of points. So he has 387 for the year. Valtteri Bottas, his teammate, 314. Max Verstappen, third. Good result for Max to see him in the top three in the world championship. 260 points. That is just 11 points better than Charles Leclerc in the first of the two Ferraris with 249. And Sebastian Vettel rounding out the top five with 230. And then also on the constructor side, well, I mean, it was wrapped up a very, very long time ago. Mercedes, I mean, wow. You just look at the number of points they have in the constructor side, 709, Ferrari 479, Red Bull 391, McLaren 140. Good for them. Really a good year for them. Way, way ahead of the next comer, and that is Renault, 91. And actually, it's going to come down probably to the last race. I mean, between Renault and Toro Rosso, who have 83 points. So it could be interesting to see whether or not Toro Rosso can pull up into the top five in the constructors. And that would be kind of a cool thing to see. But can you really believe it? After all the months and all the races and all the travel to literally all four corners of the globe, it comes down to one final race, and then that's it. The 2019 Formula One World Championship is a wrap after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix next weekend, and I can't believe it. I really can't believe how quick this season has gone. I mean, it's been a real privilege and a lot of fun to sit here each and every week to talk about Formula One, the latest news, all the races, and everything that's happened this year. I mean, we've been doing it for a number of years, but this year for me has personally been more enjoyable doing the podcast than all the others. I wouldn't say combined, but definitely it's been a fun point or a fun year to podcast about Formula One. And well, we'll see what's going to happen over Christmas. I'm thinking of going on hiatus just for a couple of years. Some of you might like that, some of you might not. Anyways, that's a bit of a Freudian slip, I suppose. Anyways, I put the show on hiatus for a couple of weeks over the holidays here in the middle of December. Maybe come back in the new year, gonna take a look and see what's coming up. So I'll make a decision in the next week or so. And we're gonna break down the season and kind of do a post-mortem like we usually do. There's usually a lot of news after the season ends, and we'll want to rate the drivers and the teams and all that fun sort of stuff anyways, so still plenty to talk about, even if we do decide to take a Christmas holiday this year. Anyways, let's talk now about Ferrari. I think we're going to call this episode that one about Ferrari, because it really is about the Scuderia and all the drama that's gone on in the past week. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about them for several weeks, and we're going to get back into the whole engine irregularities and all the accusations that maybe haven't been out and out flatly leveled at them by anybody other than Max Verstappen, who's basically came out and said that they've been cheating. Anyways, there is that to get into, but now we do have to talk about Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel, and whether or not this has the potential to become the next Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. Because a quick refresher for those of you that may be a little bit newer to Formula One, and regardless if you're new to Formula One or not, the whole Nico Rosberg situation that went on between himself and Lewis Hamilton, obviously, is far different than the situation that Mercedes has right now with Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. And that pair is going to be back for another year in 2020, so at least one more year with that current pairing. And well, I mean, 2021, that remains to be seen, of course, but what a vastly different situation that Mercedes have. I mean, with previously with Nico and Lewis, I mean, it was at frosty and icy, and that was at the best of times. I mean, it was downright going full on nuclear meltdown at some points. And I mean, I still remember several years ago, a couple years ago now, maybe it wasn't several, when they came together on the opening lap at Spa, when Nico put his end plate on his front wing into the rear tire of Hamilton. Hamilton gets a puncture and ends up all the way at the back of the field, and that was basically his day done. And that was one of the situations, multiple comings together, Austria, Spain. There's plenty of history between those two, and it really, really was pretty nasty. I mean, it actually got to the point where, you know, they had to sit down with these guys behind closed doors. And long story short, Toto Wolff basically had to lay it down and say that, you know, if we have to terminate the contract of one or both of you, then we're going to have to do that. Obviously, I think that they probably, if it ever came to that, my suspicion is, and I don't think it should be any real surprise here, if they had to go and tear up somebody's contract in front of their eyes and give them the boot out the back door, I think it probably would have happened to Nico Rosberg rather than Lewis Hamilton. Because Lewis was Lewis. He'd already won a couple of championships, won a championship for Mercedes at that point. And, well, I mean, Nico got his own championship in 2016, but the turbo hybrid era in Formula One, specifically Mercedes, has been the Lewis Hamilton story. I mean, he's been absolutely dominant over the years, and he was the top dog in the team at that time, still is the top dog in Formula One. I mean, six-time world champion, and has won it basically every year for the past so many years, I can't even remember when he didn't win it last. Well, apart from 2016. Anyways, you get the point that I'm making. But just to sort of parlay that now over to the Ferrari situation, whatever you want to call it, between Vettel and Charles Leclerc. And this was always going to be an interesting situation, in my opinion, because you have Vettel, who obviously four-time world champion in his own right, had a good first half of 2018, let's put it that way. And after things started to go wrong, specifically I'm thinking at the Italian Grand Prix last year, I mean, came back from the summer break, won impressively at Spa-Francorchamps, in my opinion. But after that, slowly but surely, things started to go wrong. The Italian Grand Prix, when he collided with Lewis Hamilton on the first lap, Singapore, and, you know, came together with Max at a somewhat eventful Japanese Grand Prix, the U.S. Grand Prix. I mean, there's plenty of things that that happened to Sebastian Vettel that weren't good at the end of last year. Anyways, Kimi Raikkonen leaves the team. Charles Leclerc comes in. Obviously, Ferrari's history, they have not gone to a young driver, no matter how talented, very often in their whole entire history in Formula One. But for better or worse, they decided to take the plunge and sign Charles Leclerc to a contract. And obviously, that's worked out. I mean, he, right from the very first opportunities that he had, right from the Australian Grand Prix, where he obviously, I think, would have finished fourth at least in that race. He was quicker than Sebastian Vettel, but team orders prevailed that day, and Charles was ordered to hold station behind his obviously slower teammate Sebastian Vettel. Should have won in Bahrain. Probably should have done a lot better than he should, or he did finish in Baku, but obviously he had the crash in the qualifying that put him back down the grid to start the race. But, you know, it took a while for him to win his first race, to get his first pole position. But over the course of the season, he's really established himself as not only a very good driver that deserves a top drive. I mean, he's established himself at Ferrari. I mean, that the conversation on whether or not he should be the number one driver instead of Vettel, obviously, I think that's a conversation that should be had. It's a legitimate discussion, a legitimate topic to have. But I mean, more than that, I mean, in his first season at Ferrari, he's proven that he's got what it takes. He obviously is a top Formula One driver. And I mean, even if you just go back to last year when he was driving at Sauber Alfa Romeo alongside Marcus Ericsson, the difference between the two was night and day. What Charles was able to do in what was obviously a very average Formula One car compared to Marcus Ericsson was night and day. I mean, they were And I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, but he was much, much better. He got much better results than him. He qualified better than Ericsson basically all season long. I don't recall off the top of my head one instance that he didn't. Is the way that he performed in all the races when he didn't have any trouble or any issues. That obviously was something completely different. But certainly when he was going well, then he was better than Ericsson all year round. So, and we've seen that, I think, to a certain extent this year as well at Ferrari in his first year. I mean, obviously, he's out-qualified Sebastian Vettel many, many times in the races, has won a couple, you know, couple of races himself. And I mean, the one real bad weekend for Charles was at Monaco, his home Grand Prix, but that's a different side. I mean, he's really proven himself. It's not that... you know, he's all hype. I mean, he's demonstrated, he's lived up to it, and he's really backed it up in what he's done in the car, on the track, in the races, and in qualifying all season long. Anyways, we're going to talk a little bit more about that after the break, but I just wanted to give a shout out to our good friends at Vivid Seats once again this week. And because if you need tickets for anything, doesn't matter if NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, college football, Formula One, hey, you can get tickets through Vivid Seats for Formula One. Got one more chance at Abu Dhabi, and then you got to wait till next year because the season's almost over. Anyways, Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for the events that you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back, and that is Vivid Seats Rewards. So go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app, and fans are automatically enrolled into the Vivid Seats Reward loyalty program. Now, every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. So download the app and join Vivid Seats Reward loyalty program today. And remember, when it is time to buy, when new users enter the promo code OVERTIME, really simple, that's promo code OVERTIME at checkout, you can receive a discount of up to $100. So remember, new users at Vivid Seats on the app, download it, get in on it, enter the promo code OVERTIME at checkout, and you can receive a discount of up to $100. Hey, sells itself. All right, well, let's go back to Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. And like I was saying just before the break there, that Charles has really cemented his position in the team. And obviously, if you're Sebastian Vettel, you're going to want to fight back. But Charles has just proven that he is just a phenomenally talented and quick driver. And that's not to take anything away from Sebastian Vettel. But, I mean, it's not as easy as it was with Kimi Raikkonen, because Kimi just was not able to push Sebastian often or frequently enough over the several years that they were teammates at Ferrari. I mean, Sebastian was just quicker than him. He got more wins than him, obviously. I mean, he was a contender numerous seasons in the World Championship. 2016 to a certain extent. Sorry, I mean, 2017 to a certain extent. Last year, definitely he was a contender. I mean, he was leading the World Championship for a good portion of the season there until the wheels started to fall off about 2/3 of the way through. Anyways, I mean, he was just naturally a little bit quicker than Kimi, but you know, enter Charles Leclerc, the young hot rookie. You know, he has a great season in his first year, comes into Ferrari, and then, you know, he's got a challenge all of a sudden, and he really has to work at it. I mean, he's had his moments. I mean, obviously for Seb, the big frustrating, I think the one race that really underlines how frustrating his season has been, I would say Montreal. I'd say the Canadian Grand Prix, because that was a race where he crossed the finish line first, but then it was taken away because he was given a time penalty for, what do they call it now, re-entering the track dangerously or whatever it was. You know, at turn three where there's that little flick to the right, you know, he went to break in that car, the rear end walked on him a little bit, and he went through the grass, came back across, and Lewis just flying and looking to seize the lead there, has to hammer on the brakes. And, you know, I mean, we've had that debate before. I mean, you could see it kind of, let's just say there was an argument to be had for the penalty and one for, you know, letting it go. So, I mean, it was just, I think, really, I think as the... I think it's a good way to describe how season's gone. I mean, he's had other incidents like the unfortunate trip off the track he had at Monza, and then collecting poor old Lance Stroll when he came back onto the track. There's been a lot of things like that. But after Italy, I think after Charles won in impressive fashion, holding off both Mercedes cars for a good portion of the race, that it was a bit of a renaissance for Vettel, a little bit. I mean, he won in Singapore. It was a little bit lucky, but hey, you know, whatever, a win is a win. Doesn't really matter how you get it. I mean, the point is that you cross the finish line first. I mean, I know that Charles was a bit bitter about that. And the point is, I think that that Ferrari have a real situation on their hands, that they have to be very careful in how they manage it moving forward in 2020. Leclerc, I don't think you want to hold the guy back. I don't think that you want to rein him in too much. I think that this year, I think it was very much the situation. Charles is a young guy, only has one year in Formula One under his belt. Sebastian's a four-time world champion, been at Ferrari for a number of years. Obviously, I think from just that point alone, from the logic dictates that Sebastian Vettel is the number one driver. But as I said this year, I mean, it's just looking at what Charles Leclerc has done on the track over the course of an entire season. Quicker than Sebastian, better in qualifying, more wins, and just an exciting driver to watch. I think you go into 2020 and I think it's all up for grabs. I think if anything, if you have to make a declaration, why not go with Charles Leclerc? I mean, he's obviously the guy for the future, and that's not to take away anything from Sebastian Vettel, but his contract is up at the end of next year. And honestly, I kind of find it hard to see Vettel staying with the Ferrari, unless, I don't know, maybe he takes a pay cut. I don't really know, but there's different ways that I guess potentially could play out. I mean, he's reiterated at different times over the season that he wants to win a world championship with Ferrari. Hey, I want to win a world championship with Ferrari, but hey, it's never going to happen because I'm not in Formula One, so I'm winning a world championship with any team in Formula One would be good from my point of view. But that's a completely different story aside. But the point is, Charles Leclerc also wants to win a world championship. And I think you have to sit down and really objectively look at the situation. If you're Mattia Bonato, team principal, I think you have to really take all of that into account and really come up with a real solid plan to address that. And actually, Bonato was saying that, what is he called silly between Sebastian Vettel and Charles Leclerc after their crash last weekend. And Bonato did say a couple of things, and he was talking specifically about basically the war between Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg. And he said, quote, "I don't know what Toto did. I don't want to judge. I'm not interested as well. But certainly we need to clarify who's with the team, what is silly and what's not. What are the limits of the actions? But when you have a crash, something was wrong, no doubt. When you're free to fight, you're free to fight, and it's only a driving matter how much you can take a risk. But certainly, here the risk was not necessary." So obviously that is Bonato referring to what happened in Brazil. It looked like they were obviously on for a good result there, and nullified by the accident that they had. And he went on to say, quote, "There's something always you can do better, but certainly in Brazil, the mistake was the mistake of the drivers. What as a team could we have done better? Not in the heat of the moment will Ferrari react, but we think certainly we need to improve that for the future, and that's not going to happen anymore." And that is got to be one of those benchmark moments, obviously. And even Ross Brawn at Formula One had to weigh in. And I mean, Brawn was obviously a technical director and team principal before moving on to other things, starting his own team, going to Mercedes, taking a bit of time away, and now is the managing director at Formula One. He had some interesting things to say. And I think when a guy like Ross Brawn speaks up on an issue, I mean, he's not completely silent. He does weigh in from time to time, but I think a guy that has the experience as an accomplished in Formula One, what he did, I think that you have to sit back and really look objectively at what a guy like Ross has to say. And he had some interesting things to say on that, and specifically, quote, "I wouldn't want to venture an opinion on who was most at fault for the collision, but in the cold light of day, maybe it would be good if one of them would follow Hamilton's example and immediately admit culpability, as the champion did regarding his clash with Albon. If Ferrari really wants to put an end to Mercedes' dominance, not only does it need to provide its driver with a more competitive car next year, it must also ensure that incidents like this one are not repeated. Formula One is a team sport, especially so at Maranello." So I think that's really interesting. And when I saw this one, I was like, well, what does he mean they have to be more like or follow Hamilton's example? But I think that, you know, obviously you never want to admit you're wrong. And I understand at that level, the elite level that these guys are at, that ego plays a lot of it. And guys don't really want to admit you know, that they were wrong, that it was their fault. But, you know, you got to give kudos to Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he got kind of caught in the thick of it there after the safety car, and he just got it wrong and locked up and took out poor old Alex Albon, who, you know, I might add, has really shown what he can do and deserves his spot there to fight among the big boys. But that's a different story. Anyways, Lewis knew right away that what he'd done. He admitted that it was all his fault, and was expecting a penalty to come down. And I think that's just a sign of not only being a good sport. I think it's a sign of responsibility, obviously, and also a good sportsmanship. And I can understand why maybe Charles or Sebastian wouldn't want to admit it. But sometimes, you know, you just gotta eat a little bit of humble pie and just take the higher road. But again, I thought it was interesting, Mattia Bonato talking about it after the race, and he said, quote, "It's not a matter of finding them or who we blame. I think that today we were free to fight. They knew that. The reason for that is we secured second place in the Constructors' Championship, and they were battling for their own position in the Drivers' Championship. But free to fight doesn't mean to do silly actions, especially between two teammates, between two Ferraris. For me, today was simply a silly action." Well, you know, that Bonato was free to say that, but, you know, I think a lot of us would have used words a little bit stronger than silly. But it is also interesting when you hear Bonato talking a little bit further. And I've made the comparison between Leclerc and Vettel and Hamilton and Rosberg. Ross Braun mentioned it in that one interview that he gave a little bit earlier, and rightly so. That's just the way that people are going to make that, because I mean it is the most recent example. I mean, we can go back as far as Senna and Prost. I mean, if you are as old as I am, I mean, fortunately, I was a kid back in the days of Senna and Prost, but that was about as bad as it got, too. Was it as bad as Hamilton and Rosberg? Probably. Probably a little bit worse. But again, you know, you're comparing two pairs of drivers from two different eras in Formula One. But the one thing that I think never really changes is the mentality of these guys that go out there and race all the time. And so they all want to win. But I particularly remember Senna and Prost being a particularly nasty rivalry. I mean, I guess the one culminating moment, the famous moment, is when they came together at Suzuka at the Japanese Grand Prix all those years ago. Anyways, Bonato did go on to say, and he said, despite that, some of the things that have happened between Vettel and Leclerc this year, that he insists that that they get on a lot better than people may think. And obviously, we're all looking at it from the outside, the majority of us, and that's just obvious. Bonato went on to say, quote, I think what I may read or hear is quite different compared to what I may see internally. It is true that in Monza, it has not been an easy situation to manage. They had to clarify. They spoke together face-to-face openly. The same happened after Russia. Currently, they've got a good relationship and they're going well together. Certainly, what happened today may not help, but I don't think there is a drama at all. I see that more as an opportunity in view of next year to clarify if needed. And I think... honestly, I think that's a good way to deal with it. Do what you need to do behind closed doors, but out in the media, out when speaking to the rest of the world, to the rest of us, to the fans, the media, whoever, and obviously their competitors and rivals as well, just play it cool. Don't get too excited about it and just be a little bit nonchalant, but behind closed doors, decide what you need to do and then just be firm on it. Just say this, whatever the situation or the resolution is to that, just be firm in it, stick with it, and then that's how you move forward, and that's how you deal with it after this watershed, this benchmark moment. But interesting nonetheless. And I think finally we can get away from the Vettel and Leclerc drama, and let's talk now about Ferrari. Why not? Let's talk about them a little bit more. And they're saying now for the first time that they're almost matching Red Bull in corners for the first time. So they reduced their straight line speed at the Brazilian Grand Prix, was down to an aerodynamic configuration that meant it almost matched their rival Red Bull in the corners around the track. So they had six consecutive pole positions since the summer break, and now they've gone two races without a pole, and they were... well, they were notably slower in qualifying on the straights, and then also in the race at Brazil compared to practice. And that's obviously can come down to things like engine modes and things like that. And of course, that brings up a discussion which we're going to get into about the whole speculation suggestion that they were doing questionable things and trying to circumvent the rules with their engines. And that's been a topic of discussion for a long, long time. But it is the timing is interesting. But the SF90 has just not been, I think, I don't think that I know it. It just hasn't lived up to the expectations that we had way back in winter testing, when it looked like they were just so much better and faster than everyone else. But when it came to reality and to race situations, it was a far different situation. And the reduction in the straight line speed, for those that believe that something as funny is going on, was that that they were circumventing the rules about the potential oil burns and fuel flow exploitations and things like that. But they've been adamant about it for quite some time now that is not the case, and they are insistent that they have not changed anything on their engine since the FIA came out with a technical directive a couple of weeks ago regarding fuel flow rules and the use of liquids for combustion. And that is just, it's almost, if anything, it's kind of really fanned those because those discussions and those rumors, they just haven't gone away. But Mattia Binotto, he had to clarify that, and he said in an interview with Sky, quote, "No, we didn't change nothing. What we did is read it carefully to the TDs, because you need to meet up with whatever is new technical directive. It is important to understand it. But we didn't change our operations, our way of using the engines, and that is since the start of the season. We still have got an advantage on the straights. I think we know that since the start of the season that we are lacking downforce, and maybe our car is somehow more fast on the straights. Since the very start of F1, if you drop your downforce, you get some more speed on the straights, but you reduce your speed in the cornering. And our car is not as good as others in cornering." So that is an interesting clarification. And obviously, that's, after, almost two dozen races, I mean, we're what, race 21 next week, that they are still tinkering with the different settings on the car. And just that whole problem and question of downforce has literally plagued them right from the very start of the season. I mean, we've seen at times where it's worked better for them, but That's been more in the second half of the season. First half of the season, they were a step behind anyone or everyone else. But it really is, I think, an interesting case study to see just how much difference that you can make to a car just by tinkering around with some of the different settings. And we're going to talk a little bit more after we take a short break here on the Overtime Media Network. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the show. And just picking up on that topic we were talking about just before the break, and that was just about the legality of fuel flow and oil burns and things like that. And anyways, Formula One has decided that they are going to implement another additional fuel flow sensor for 2020, and this is in wake of the whole directive and clarification that they gave on the fuel flow and oil burning and things like that. So they did do an investigation of fuel systems after the Brazilian Grand Prix on one which is commonly believed to be from a Ferrari. The other was a fuel system from a Ferrari customer team, and a third fuel system from a non-Ferrari powered car. Anyways, on Wednesday this week, the FIA issued another technical directive, which was the third in less than a month, instructing teams that next year they'll be required to add a second FIA-controlled sensor in 2020. So what isn't really known, if this was not a response to the checks that they did after the race in Brazil, but the new sensor will help them to police engine rules next year. So it just really isn't going away, this whole discussion. So like I say, it is fascinating to see that Ferrari is saying on one hand, and I mean they've been insistent about it for this whole time, that there's been this big discussion while countering all the speculation and outright accusations from people like Max Verstappen that they haven't done anything. But James Allison from Mercedes had also weighed in on that as well, and he had to say, quote, "I think they were still pretty useful on the straights, but not quite as marked as it was Friday," and that was practice. "This could be all sorts of things. We run different power modes on a Friday. Probably the only thing you could stand back from a distance and say is that it's two races on the trot where it hasn't been pole position for Ferrari, and they sort of had reasonably comfortable margin. So it's an interesting thing, but you could not draw any solid conclusions from. There's still a quick car on the straights, so let's just see how they are in the race tomorrow and how they are in the races to come." And that's a similar statement that James Allison made to Tanabe, the big boss at Honda had made similar comments a couple of weeks ago. But I do think it's interesting. While he says it's interesting, the situation that Ferrari is still in, that he is still acknowledging their the advantage in the straight line speed that they have, even though that they've been slightly slower, and it's a situation that they're monitoring somewhat closely. I think everybody is, but fascinating to hear somebody else's input on it, especially when it's somebody with the stature of technical director of technical director at Mercedes, James Allison. Anyways, sticking with him, it was his first time on the pit role as the leader at Mercedes in wake of Toto Wolff and taking a race's absence. And it was the first time that Toto was not at a Grand Prix on the pit wall or in the garage for, well, a number of years, since 2013. Anyways, he stayed behind to concentrate on other things now that both championships for the drivers and constructors world championships were sewn up. Anyways, it was a bit of a tough debut for Allison. Lewis finished seventh. Valtteri Bottas retired with an engine failure, and it was obviously one of their worst races of the season. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I think the German Grand Prix rates up there. I mean, Bottas crashed out, so did Lewis, but I mean, that was more down to the conditions. I mean, it was a torrential downpour at Hockenheim that day. I mean, it was good conditions to race at Interlagos last weekend. There's no doubt about it. So to see things like a Mercedes having a mechanical issue, I mean, it rarely happens. And I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I mean, just off the top of my head, the last time that I remember a Mercedes engine failing, and correct me if I'm wrong, was Lewis Hamilton, the Malaysian Grand Prix in 2016. And that was, I wouldn't say that's when it really ended his challenge for the world championship that year, but it gave Nico Rosberg a bit of breathing room, and he just kind of coasted from there, and Hamilton did close the gap. And then, of course, it came down to that season finale in Abu Dhabi in 2016. Anyways, the point is, whether it was 2016 or not, it just does not happen very often. I mean, to use the phrase that a Mercedes mechanical failure happens about as often as once in a blue moon is, not a very current thing or common thing. I mean, another one that's come to mind is the Austrian Grand Prix last year, where they had a double DNF, which was the first time since the 1950s, I believe. And it was a rough race that they had. I mean, when have we ever seen Lewis Hamilton have a moment like he had with Alexander Albon? I mean, again, it just does not happen. I mean, we've seen plenty of incidents with Sebastian Vettel getting mixed up and in situations with other guys like that. But for Lewis, I mean, that is just almost a completely unheard of situation. So it was a tough race for them. Fortunately, if you're looking at it from the point of view from Mercedes, it really isn't a race that they needed to win. Obviously, I think they would like to. I mean, but again, both the drivers and constructors championships were sewn up weeks, and in some cases months ago. I mean, the actual crossing that mathematical line when it was a certainty, a fact that it was now official, that was just that was a confirming moment. I mean, they were both decided really months ago, back in the summer, because I mean, they just had such a good start to the season, and Red Bull and Ferrari just weren't able to offer up a stronger challenge more often. Anyways, just talking more about how wrong things went for them last weekend, was that they came out later and said that giving Hamilton the option or offering them a late pit stop was just plain dumb. And James Allison, he went on to say that, well, he did say it was dumb. He also said it was a rookie error, but it was just wasn't what we've come to really expect from them. I mean, they're usually spot on when it comes to the tactics. I mean, they've made some really gutsy calls and decisions in several recent races and this year. But it was funny, you know, just to kind of like hear the radio calls. I mean, you had Lewis's engineer Pete Bonington saying a couple times on the radio, you know, if he wanted fresh tires, and you know, because he was going to lose a place. And then Hamilton came back and he said, "Quote, you make the decision." And then that was followed up by I'll come in, just as he reached the pit entry. But it was kind of it wasn't well played. It was not peak Mercedes, let's put it that way.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places: Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan. But nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Anyways, like I said, we talked a little bit more earlier about this, just about Hamilton taking responsibility for the or owning the incident that he had that took out Alex Albon, and he decided after the race that he was not going to defend himself in front of the stewards and just accept his punishment. And like I say, I think that was a classy and a very sporting move from Lewis. He knew he was wrong, and he was just prepared to sit back and accept the punishment. And just sticking now with Lewis Hamilton just for a couple more moments, he says he's not looking forward to another stressful moment of contract talks with Mercedes next year, as he's looking towards what his next move in Formula One is going to be. So his contract runs out at the end of 2020, and it just has to be, I think, a logical conclusion that he will re-sign with Mercedes. I mean, could you really see him going anywhere else? I mean, I really can't. I mean, I've seen some pictures online where people have kind of photoshopped Lewis in a Ferrari driver's overall. I mean, I guess you could say that, but I mean, at this point, I mean, I just really associate Lewis Hamilton with Mercedes. I mean, of course, before he came to Mercedes way back, a number of years ago, he started his career in Formula One with McLaren, powered by Mercedes at that time. And I think his relationship with Mercedes goes way back into his early teenage years. So, I mean, that's a little bit different. I mean, most of us know Lewis from Formula One. And I think that what he's done and what he's achieved with them, I mean, 5 world championships with Mercedes. I mean, that is just, it's Michael Schumacher-like. I mean, let's just put it that way. I mean, all the championships he won at Ferrari and Lewis. Just like I associate Ferrari and Michael Schumacher as being, you know, they just go together. I see Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes in very much the same light. But Lewis had to say this to say, quote, "I only just did this contract and already I have to start talking about potentially the next one, which is frustrating because it's another stressful moment where if you get into the room, get into the ring and have a friendly yet intense conversation about the terms and all of this kind of thing. But I'm used to it and I like to think that I'm a relatively good negotiator." Well, we'll wait and see. I would be surprised if they couldn't come together. I mean, I think it just seems logical I think obvious at this point that they're going to drive a dump truck load of money up to Lewis's front door. I mean, he's earned it. I mean, he's obviously worth it. And it'll be interesting to see what, if and what sort of number that they can come together on it. Like I say, I feel like it's I wouldn't say a formality, but it just seems like it will be a deal that that'll get done. I mean, Lewis seems like he's keen to stay in Formula One, seems like he's keen to sample the new regulations and the new look to Formula One, if you want to call it that, in 2021. And obviously, I think if Mercedes keeps delivering on the cars and doing all the things that that we've seen them do over the past number of years, you'd have to think that if you have a car and a team like that at I would say at your disposal, but certainly if you have the opportunity to climb back in that car and win races and world championships, then you'd have to think that that'd be really, really attractive. But I guess the only question is how much is good enough for Lewis Hamilton? How much is, when does he decide that that he's done everything that he needs to do in Formula One, and when he needs to finally just get up and walk away and go on to what he wants to do next? And certainly I think he's deserved and he's earned that right to walk away on his own terms. But he said even just a couple of weeks ago that Formula One is an unfinished masterpiece or something like that. And certainly I think we'll see. My feeling is, like I say, I think that we'll see Lewis Hamilton in Formula One for a couple of years yet. Okay, well, we've talked about Ferrari at length. We've talked about Mercedes for not quite as long, but let's talk about them. Well, let's talk about not them again. Let's move on down the line. Let's talk about Red Bull, the whole extended Red Bull family for a little bit. And let's talk now about Pierre Gasly, because this is a good moment. The guy had a very tough year starting out at Red Bull. And then being demoted, if you want to call it that, swapping with Alex Albon. Albon going up to Red Bull, Gasly going back to Toro Rosso, where he was last year. And but Gasly, in all the chaos and all the mayhem at the end of the Brazilian Grand Prix in those final stages, comes home, crosses the finish line in second behind Max Verstappen, his former Red Bull teammates. And I think it's a great story. I mean, like I say, it was a really, really difficult start to the year for him. I mean, he just I wouldn't even say that it was difficult once the lights went green in Melbourne. It was difficult even back in winter testing. Gasly crashed it, crashed the car, and that really limited the time and the spare parts that they had, and they just weren't able to achieve or get as much track time. And you know, they were just didn't have everything at their disposal they needed to do. Anyways, it put a real crimp in what they needed to achieve, and it was tough. I mean, you could tell that he was really struggling. He wasn't delivering points as much or as often as you would expect from the guy in the second Red Bull car. I mean, Max Verstappen and Danny Ricciardo over the past couple of years prior to this year had really racked up a lot of points together. They were a good pairing, and both of them were good for winning a couple of races every year, and always get a number of podiums along with that. And it is interesting now, because the big boss at Red Bull Motorsport, and that's Helmut Marko, he feels that Pierre Gasly would not have recovered or gotten out of that funk that he was in if he had stayed at Red Bull. And it was really beneficial for him to go back to Toro Rosso. And I think it is an interesting situation. I mean, Gasly is obviously still a young driver, but Toro Rosso is one of these development teams, right? And I mean, it's usually a stepping stone for their junior drivers to get into Formula One, and with the long-term or medium-term, I should say, goal of getting them into the big team, into Red Bull itself. And from there, obviously, you have an opportunity to win races, get on the podium, and obviously, ultimately, win a world championship if they can get the car and the engine to really put them in that position. So my question is, seeing what Pierre Gasly has done since his return to Toro Rosso, which is he's been very good. He's been consistent. Obviously, in a Toro Rosso, he's not going to be up on podiums or in that top, say, five or six cars on a regular basis. I mean, occasionally. I mean, they've had their moments from time to time this year. Don't get me wrong. But long term, is he going to stick there? I mean, like I say, it's more of a development team. And Alex Albon, who took his spot at Red Bull, has been more consistent and has scored a number of points in the time that he's been with the big team since that mid-season switch. And if he continues to deliver and do what he's done next year, obviously because he's going to be retained with the team next year, is there going to be an opportunity for Gasly to go back there in the future, or is it just sort of going to be one of these situations where he sticks around with Toro Rosso for a little while, and then maybe at some point it's going to be no more room for him because the next product of the Red Bull system will be ready to move up into Formula One, and they'll need a seat for him. But they did have some issues, obviously, with drivers and super points or super license points, and that was a big reason for Danny Kvyat coming back, because he kind of worked his way up all the way from Toro Rosso to Red Bull, and then all the way back down, and then out of a car, and because he was reserve or simulator driver to Ferrari last year. And then due to the fact that they didn't have enough qualified drivers to get into that Toro Rosso, Kvyat finds himself back in the team, back in Formula One this year. I mean, he's had his moments. I think that Kvyat's looked more mature, a lot more predictable, and just dependable, rather than the torpedo of old. But yeah, interesting to see. But I don't want to take anything away from Gasly, because I think it was a result that was well deserved. And even Max Verstappen, he had to say that it was awesome. Or incredible, I think, was the word that he used. And Hamilton had to say that it was really awesome to see. So nice to see him getting some kudos and some praise from his fellow drivers. And Gasly himself had to say that what he called an insane podium was, quote, the best day of his life. And it's good to see. It was one of those feel good stories, and that is, I think, part of the problem when you have basically the top spots almost automatically and exclusively locked out by Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull each and every weekend. When you have one of these races that's turned upside down onto its head because of rain, or because of situations that we had in Brazil with multiple safety cars right at the end of the race there, it does bring situations like that up, and it really, I think, it makes it fun. I think it makes it a better, I think it's more enjoyable. When you see these guys that usually don't have a shot to get on the podium, I think it just makes a nice change from the status quo. Anyways, Red Bull did go on to say that Alex Albon should, quote, hold his head high despite the opportunity of getting on the podium for the first time when he was punted off the track rather unceremoniously and ungraciously by Lewis Hamilton. And again, that's motor racing for you. Sometimes it can be a bit of a full sport in that way. I mean, he looked like he was on pace and really only had a couple more laps really to go before that race was going to be over. So certainly very, very disappointing for Alex Albon. And very much like Charles Leclerc getting his maiden win this year, I think for Albon that it's just going to be a question of time before he gets his first podium. And I honestly, I can see him being a regular up there. I think that he has shown that he deserves, that he's earned his right to be at Red Bull. And I think that he's rewarded and paid back the faith that the brass have put in him over these past several races since joining them after the summer break. Anyway, so sort of a parallel topic now. Danny Ricciardo said that he's not bitter over the, quote, impressive Red Bull Honda surge this season. And he says that he feels happy rather than bitter over the form of Red Bull in Brazil after his former teammate Max Verstappen took another pole position, then another win. But you have to think that even though he's coming out and, I mean, he's saying the right thing publicly, right? But you just have to wonder, though, compared to what's happened for Red Bull, they have not gone backwards in their first year with Honda Power compared to when they had Renault Power over the past number of years, but definitely they haven't regressed since last year. And arguably, I think they're marginally ahead of where they were with Renault Power. So I still have to question the wisdom in, or maybe not the wisdom, but the decision of Ricardo to go from Red Bull to Renault. I can understand it because obviously I think that Red Bull is Max Verstappen's team. Regardless if they came out and said that Max is our number one compared to Danny Ricciardo, I think it just seems that way. I mean, it's a, when you see how teams just fit certain guys, that, I mean, we all know that Mercedes is Lewis Hamilton's team, right? I mean, I think that's pretty obvious and logical to say. Ferrari, I think that's a big questionable at the debatable right now what we've seen this year, but Red Bull is Max Verstappen's team, and obviously I think that Danny Ricciardo felt, well, one way or another, that regardless how long he stayed there, that I guess to some extent he may be in Max's shadow, or maybe have to play second fiddle to Max, and I guess he wasn't prepared to do that, and I guess he saw the opportunity to go to Renault, a works team with resources and a history of doing good things in Formula One and winning, as both a works team and also as an engine supplier. I can see the attractiveness in wanting to do that and go to a team like that. Unfortunately, Renault just hasn't been able to get over that hump. The car this year, they're just not as good as last year. And where they've failed a little bit, McLaren has been able to pull in and slide into that position. And as I was talking about it at the top of the show, I mean, they have been obviously had a very good year, and they've been much better than Renault. So that, I think that Ricciardo, even though he might say publicly he's not bitter about that, you still have to wonder in the back of his mind whether or not that plays on his mind, whether or not that was the right decision to do. Anyways, no changing it now. Their lineups are set, obviously, and I think that for better or worse, Danny Ricciardo is where he is. But just talking about McLaren again, Carlos Sainz says that he's relishing the McLaren continuity after what he called was a weird end at Renault last season. But I think that the pairing that they have at McLaren this year of Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz, even though they're both the young guys in Lando first year in Formula One, I think that they've done well. And Carlos Sainz, I mean, to me, it was an interesting choice. I mean, he was a Toro Rosso driver for a while, and then and that whole switch with the engines and Hondas and everything like that then loaned over to Renault last year, and then it was, like I say, it was a bit strange situation, but I think that the switch to McLaren from Red Bull, sorry, Toro Rosso and Renault has worked out for Carlos Sainz. I don't know, really how good he is. I mean, he's doing very well at McLaren this year. I think he's a very handy driver, but again, it's a little bit, at least from my point of view, a little bit difficult to call to make. You know, is he good enough to win races? Is he good enough to in that regard when he's driving a car? Although then I don't want to take anything away from McLaren, because the car this year is a lot better than it was last year and the last number of years, but I don't know. I think for me, the jury is still out on Carlos Sainz, but still, I think what he's done and Lando Norris have done, I think they deserve applause, because looks like that they are on spot to win fourth or take fourth in the Constructors Championship after the season is all said and done, despite maybe a little bit of a protest from Toro Rosso, but they'll have to snatch it away from them with a good number of points at the final race in Abu Dhabi next week. Anyways, just sticking with Sainz, he says he has no doubts that his charge from the back of the grid to take his first podium finish in Formula One was the best race of his life. It's just a shame in a way that the stewards took so long to make the ruling on Lewis Hamilton, and he wasn't able to actually get up on the podium and celebrate with Gasly and Verstappen. But still, P3 is P3. He gets a trophy for it, and certainly I think it was a great result for him as well. I mean, it is good to be talking about McLaren in a positive light, and certainly Sainz was a performance in Brazil was another good moment and a good season for the team. Now let's just talk about a couple more things as we start to slow it down and slowly close it out. I mean, we're already over an hour here, but like I say, there was a lot to talk about this year. So the Miami Grand Prix, or potential Miami Grand Prix, is bought 3 to 6 months as the mayor's veto is upheld. And that is a major speed bump that was overcome when the Miami-Dade Board of County Commissioners backed the mayor's veto of the original decision to prohibit the use of public roads for a race. So he, and this is Mayor Carlos A. Jimenez, stressed the, instead of killing his idea outright, the authorities at Miami-Dade take time to work towards a solution, and has bought the race 3 to 6 months to get a deal agreed. So it isn't quite dead, but it's not certain that it's going ahead. And honestly, I'd like to see the race take place there. Anytime we can get another race here in America and North, and just, I think it's a good thing, right? I mean, a lot of us in North America have grown up watching Formula One on TV, and honestly, Miami is about as far as you can get in North America from my home here in Vancouver, but still, when it's almost on home soil, it just has a bit of a different feel to it. You know, you look at it, you see all the same things there, except maybe the palm trees, which we don't have here, that they have in South Florida. But hey, I mean, everything else apart from that looks really, really familiar, and it's just cool to see. And I think it's crucial for Formula One to have more races in America and in the continent in general. Obviously, I think that one Canadian Grand Prix is more than enough, but two races in the USA, I think, is extremely feasible, and I think it's important to the continued growth of Formula One here in the future. Anyways, just looking ahead to the Dutch Grand Prix next year, apparently the banking in the final corner at Zandvoort is going to be very similar to an American oval track, with the final corner being twice as steep as the turns at Indianapolis. So that's going to be really, really cool. So it's going to be angled at 32%, which is the equivalent of 18 degrees. And that is it's similar to Indianapolis, which hosted the U.S. Grand Prix between 2000 and 2007. They ran on a portion of the oval and then an infield track. I mean, it was all right. I mean, it was kind of cool to see Formula One cars running on a portion of Indy. But again, when I think of Indy, I think of the oval. And while it was cool to see them on a portion of the oval, the infield track really didn't do a lot for me. And I think a purpose-built track like the Circuit of Americas, I think, is a much better thing. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Miami, of course. But anyways, just getting back to Zandvoort, it is kind of cool. They're going to be putting the banking in at Zandvoort, and it'll be really cool to see the cars racing around there next year. So just a couple more things here. Esteban Ocon is going to get in the cockpit for Renault for the first postseason test at Abu Dhabi after the Grand Prix there, and he's going to be joining the team on December 2nd, which is the day after the Grand Prix, and he's going to take part in the 2020 Pirelli tire test. So that, of course, he's in at Renault next year, and Nico Hülkenberg is out. And before we just talk about Nico Hülkenberg, the FIA has just admitted that the 2020 tire choice process has not been perfect. And so we'll wait and see what happens with that. The tires that they tested with the 2020 specs at Austin didn't go over very well, and that the teams has agreed with the FIA that the planned 2020 tire test in Abu Dhabi should go ahead, so more data can be gathered. And if there's still dissenting and negative views after that, a vote will be undertaken as to what is going to happen. Anyway, just finally now finishing with Nico Hülkenberg, the Hulk is out of Formula One, but he says that despite he doesn't have an opportunity to race or seat to race in Formula One in 2020, he says that he will be ready for any opportunity that may arise, even though there's nothing concrete at the moment. He was most recently linked to race in IndyCar next year with Ed Carpenter Racing, but team boss Ed Carpenter himself said earlier this week that that was going to happen. In Formula One, it looked like Giovinazzi might be leaving Alfa Romeo, but they decided to extend him, and that was basically the last sliver of a hope that Hülkenberg had to stay in Formula One. He straight up said that he was not going to return to Williams, which is a team they raced for in the past. And they're looking that it's looking as though that Nicholas Latifi, my fellow Canadian, who's a front runner in Formula Two and is a junior driver for Williams, is already practiced for them this year, or driven in a practice session for Williams. Looks like he's going to get that second seat alongside George Russell, who's already been confirmed for next year. So anyways, on that situation about leaving Formula One or not having to drive for next year, Hülkenberg said, quote, "No regrets. Of course, I've done mistakes like we all do sometimes that I would have liked to avoid. A few moves or things I do differently now, but it's always easy to say with hindsight. So all in all, I'm at peace with what I've achieved, and I don't feel I'm retiring as a race driver. I don't feel I am leaving F1. I might not be on the grid, but if there's an opportunity, I'm going to be ready." So he did also say that that there were other offers from other series and other teams, but he hasn't publicly said anything. He's also been linked with possibly driving in DTM. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands. I like Nico Hülkenberg. I know that he's not a top driver, but he's never really had the best of cars to really do anything spectacular in Formula One. Here's a guy that won Le Mans not all that long ago. So I'm sad to leave him. See, he's also a bit of a character. I like the way that he conducts himself as well. So a bit disappointing. So I'll be one to watch and see if he comes back. But 32, he's not that old. Certainly plenty of plenty of gas left in the tank, pun intended, for Nico Rosberg. I mean, he's not too old, but we'll see how soon and if he's able to get back into Formula One at some point next season or in the future beyond that. Anyways, guys, I just realized I left my water outside of the studio here, and we're well over an hour now, so I think this is a good time to close it off and shut it down for this week. Again, thank you very much for listening. A special shout out to all the listeners that have they're newly subscribed and left nice ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and anywhere else. It really does make a difference and helps us here grow the show, and really appreciate all the kind words that we also get from you guys on Twitter via email. And of course, if you want to get in touch with us with any questions, comments, feedback, whatever it might be, you can do so on the Twitters at ScuderiaF1Pod or via email at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Once again, my name is Mark Daly. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to the show this week. One more race to go. We'll talk about it next week. And until then, we'll talk to you soon. Have a great weekend, And that's it. That's a wrap. I'm out of here. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast.
If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com.
Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.